Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Weed Day Wednesday, Tucson, Arizona's number one online radio podcast about all things medical cannabis. Your hosts, Bellstar
and the Cannabis Kid. Our show features news, interviews, and all the latest information about anything and everything medical cannabis related in Tucson, Arizona, and the world at large.
We'd love to hear from you. Please give us a call, 646-915-8421. Email thctucson at gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, visit us on MySpace, or tweet with us on Twitter.
Our sponsors for Weed Day Wednesday are Growers House, Accurate Med Testing, EasyMarijuana.com, and Culture Magazine.
We would like to thank Tumbleweed Health Center and Studio C for hosting our show every week, along with the lowest price certifications in town. You'll find hemp products, accessories, and all things educational related to medical cannabis.
Visit Tumbleweed Health Center at 5315 East Broadway Boulevard or online at tumbleweedhealthcenter.com.
And remember,
be smart, be safe, and educate.
Good morning.
Good morning,
welcome
everybody.
Weed Day Wednesday.
How are you doing, Bellstar?
I'm great, Cannabis Kid. How are you?
I'm doing good.
I'm getting past a dusted bowl, I hear. Oh, party foul. July 30th, 2014. I was going to say 19-something, but it's not. But coming up is my 25th high school reunion this weekend. I'm really excited.
I know, we're both going to
I'm going to be in Cali this weekend. You're going south, I'm going north.
Yeah, I'll be in San Diego, and you'll be in
Napa.
Napa.
In the Napa Valley.
Both very beautiful.
It's the Valley Girls. Here, I got it.
Try to stay with, stay away from everything in the middle there.
Yeah, just a dusty,
really,
kind of like people.
Yeah. Not too loud there, Val.
No, I know. I didn't say that.
Not too loud.
I didn't. I love the desert.
Why we're Me too.
Yeah. Well, welcome to Weed Day Wednesday. We have a super fun show this morning. We have our very own United States federal patient.
And he wants to talk to you.
Yeah, he wants to talk big time. Federal medical cannabis patient. Yes, the federal government has its own patients. Yes, the government that tells you, no, you can't have any. But we can, and we can share it with other people that we choose.
There's 30 of them, correct?
13, I think. Well, I'm sure there were a bunch more than that, but I think they whittled it to 13. Mm-hmm. There are four left. And Mr. Irvin Rosenfeld will be on to tell us a story. Getting up there. He'll be on to tell us the story about what's going on with the feds these days. There's a lot going on with the feds these days. There's a lot going on in the news. I still like the fact that Colorado's selling 700 pounds a day, wasn't we figured out last week? Holy cow!
That's just the out-of-state.
And that's mostly to out-of-state patrons, and also the homeless shelters are finding a rise in the occupancy in their homeless shelters. They're full. They're full up.
They're saying
everyone's
a lot more homeless people are moving.
Yeah. They're moving on in.
Moving into Colorado.
Colorado. Yeah. Wow. Well, what we got going on in the news a little bit this morning? You got anything fun and exciting other than Colorado smoking 700 pounds a day? I wonder if you're growing that.
I've got a former Colorado jail might transform into a massive marijuana grow facility from marijuana.com.
A jail to a grow facility?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's quite a lot of acreage.
That is quite a lot of acreage. That's pretty crazy acreage.
I wonder if they're going to do it outside.
Maybe they'll just pop the top and make a giant greenhouse.
That's actually not a bad idea.
Hey, guys, come on, share some of those ideas over here.
So it says, in March, Colorado native Nicholas Elker purchased the town of Bush's DeFont growing facility. Now more than 6 months of successful legal weed in Colorado's history books, Ecker wants to turn his purchase into a cultivation facility and start selling retail cannabis in Brush.
Wow.
The only problem is Brush is a town, the motto, homegrown happiness, has a moratorium.
Oh, yeah.
A moratorium on marijuana business in place until 2016. The moratorium means no individuals can legally grow cannabis or sell retail marijuana in Brush's confines.
Okay. Wow.
So
there you go.
he's going to be, sounds like he's
going
to be working
on
that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's got till 2016, so he can break ground on renovations.
That's a huge facility. Oh, my gosh. That place
you've only
is huge.
Got outside, plus you have the barbed wire to keep people out, so you could grow outside.
Yeah.
So true.
I mean, those fences are quite tall.
Yeah, talk about security.
It definitely keeps people
we've
in.
We've got a tower.
So definitely keep
we've
people
got some night watch going
feet.
On.
Right, and you've got
I
a watch tower.
I see it. I
you've got
see
the
it
watch
happening.
Tower. You've got the cameras.
Oh, my God. Can you believe it?
What a great place.
What a great Let's just see, they're going to just release all these prisoners. They're not going to have much to do with their jail, so
well, I mean,
turn them into grow houses.
That's why all the homeless people are moving to Colorado. But, I mean, imagine all the jobs that are about to, you know, develop and open up.
Oh, that's true.
I mean,
we hope they get a bunch of them because
absolutely.
That would be fantastic. Trimming.
It's jobs.
Yeah.
That's why
I mean,
moving.
Yeah.
You don't want to go retail, go
just
into
by
the
saying that, it, he's going to, the facility could initially generate about 31 jobs. And for a substantial tax revenue, which
excellent.
Could help build better schools, and such tax revenue from marijuana sales in the state is only available to communities that participate in the production or the sales of marijuana. So Brush's state, or the little city of Brush, would benefit quite well from all the tax revenue that's coming in for the schools.
Which as of until 2016, they won't receive any of that stuff. Right?
No. Not until they actually say that they're allowed to do it.
Wow. Well, hey, guess who's on the line here? Let's chat with Mr. Irvin Rosenfeld and see if he can't answer some of these questions that we have burning in our minds about our federalism. Hello. You're
good
on
morning.
Air.
How are y'all? Yes,
good
how are
morning.
Y'all?
Good morning, Irvin. We're great. How are you? Bellstar.
I'm well.
Kid here. Excellent. How's Florida this morning?
Hot and it'll be stormy by this afternoon.
Yes.
Yeah. One of our own is moving to Florida soon, so you might be neighbors. We'll have to send you some messages out there. So what's going on in your world, Irvin? This is our, you know, we have a lot of, I should interrupt really quickly here. We have your federal tin, empty, of course, that you get with your medical cannabis cigarettes every month on display in our waiting room here with your book up there. And people always ask, and this is how you can tell everybody, how the heck did you get into this program? How did you start this, do this? People want to know, how is this happening? Why can't
Well, yeah, I discovered in 1971, when I was 18 and a half, that cannabis worked better for my bone disorder than the conventional drugs I was getting. And so I convinced my orthopedic surgeon to allow me to write up a scientific project using cannabis and Dilaudid, which is synthetic morphine, together as an adjunct medicine, and to apply to FDA for a research license for my doctor and me being the patient. That was a it went 10 years. It took 10 years before I finally got it. And it's really too long to go in detail about, you know, those 10 years. Of course, it's all in my book. But the point was is I was able to come under what was called a compassionate care investigational new drug program. I mean, the federal government wasn't agreeing that cannabis is a medicine, as they still don't, but that they were giving me, they were out of compassion, the federal government would let my doctor use this medicine for me. And again, I had to have hearings before FDA, and I was lucky enough to win those hearings in 1982. And I became the second person in the United States to receive medical cannabis from the United States federal government. The program got up to 13 patients, and we found in the early 90s that it worked well for AIDS patients. And so Bob Randall put together a blank protocol scientific study for AIDS patients and sent them to the AIDS organizations. They bombarded then George Bush Sr. with thousands of protocols. He did not want to look soft on drugs, plus he was running for re-election against Clinton, and a lot of his funding was coming from the pharmaceutical industry. So somehow he arbitrarily got Health and Human Services to shut the program down that I'm under, thereby not allowing anybody else to get into the program. And the 13 of us that were receiving medicine at the time were grandfathered in, so we didn't sue the government. There were another 28 patients that had been approved by all three government agencies to receive medical cannabis by DEA, FDA, and NIDA, but they never received any, and they were told that the only thing they could do is take Marinol. So in a nutshell, that's really how I came under it. So today there are two of us left alive in the program that are getting it. That's LV Musica for glaucoma, and she's in Oregon, and then myself here in Florida. So, you know, once they shut the program down in 92, there was no way that any patient in the United States could legally get access to cannabis. That's why it was so important that we start passing these laws in 1996, with California and your state being the first two, to allow patients to be able to not be considered criminals, but patients. So that's what we're doing today. Still.
So how is it that they figure they can grow it and provide it for you, but not anybody else?
Well, you probably have to ask somebody in the government, okay? They consider this, again, experimentation and research. Now, they've never researched me in the almost 32 years that they've been giving it to me. Okay, so
really?
They don't want to know that it works. Okay, so they just...
Research, are they doing this? They're not researching you. Are they researching the other patients?
No, they're not researching any patients, okay? What they're doing is there are a few studies with possible patients around the country that I don't know about that doctors might be doing, but mostly what they're doing is researching to try to figure out which chemicals, which cannabinoids work best and how to synthesize them so a pharmaceutical company can make money off of it. That's mostly what the research they're doing. And the farm in Mississippi also, the lab there, also serves as the national lab for the country, meaning any marijuana that's confiscated, if they want to know what's in it or how strong it is, they send it to Mississippi, and Mississippi analyzes it.
Now, are they analyzing, obviously, what they're giving you? What kind of a product are they're growing it for you?
They are. I get what they consider medium grade, and it's 3.6% THC.
Medium grade?
That's considered medium grade, correct.
Wow.
2.0 or 2.3 or whatever would be low grade. And then I'm not sure what the strength of high grade. At one point it was 5.99.
Wow.
And that was the highest grade. Yeah.
That's crazy. So you are, and how often do you get your cannabis, and tell us how you go about getting it and what form it comes in for those people out there that are listening that are new and don't know.
Okay, well, like the tin can you've got in your facility is the way they package it. They send the marijuana. It's grown in Mississippi. Then they send the marijuana, the whole plant, to Raleigh, North Carolina, where it's basically the entire plant is ground up, except for the seeds and stems, basically, and then put freeze-dried. Take the moisture out of it, and then they're put in 300 cigarettes to a tin can you've got there. And that's how I receive it. They ship in 6 tins at a time for myself and for Elvie. And the pharmacy in Miami that I pick it up at is the pharmacy for University of Miami. And I go down there, and I pick up one tin every 25 days. So they hold it for me, which is nice of them. They don't have to, but they do. And so I go down there every 25 days and pick up a tin.
And can we ask a personal question? Do you consume all that in the 25 days, and is that why it's like not once a month, or do you need more than that? Do you use less than that?
Well, the reason it came to that is really, and actually now I really don't need to. It used to be that the cigarettes were 9/10 of a gram, okay, and my prescription called for 10 a day. And around 1991 or 92, somewhere right around there, all of a sudden the tins started coming in 7/10 of a gram. Okay, and so I was getting less. So my doctor says, well, just up the prescription to 12 a day. Okay? So that's what my prescription on my baggies say 10 a day. But we order it like every 25 days. So that's basically how it comes in when they ship it. And so, but what I say I don't need to do that now is actually for the last shipment, the cigarettes were back to 9/10 of a gram.
Oh, wow.
They've got the weight right on the tin can. You see the government label, you know, it has the government label, then it has the weight of each cigarette and the weight of including the weight of the paper and the total weight, you know, when it was packaged, and it gives you all the government label information on there. So, and then, yes, I try to consume as much as I can. But it's difficult sometimes to do that when you are trading stocks during the day, like I do for a living, because it's hard to go outside. So what I have in my office is I have actually two vapor machines. I have one vapor machine that will vape leaf, And then I have a vape pen, which I've made oil out of my medicine, and I have that oil in the vape pen. So that's what I can use, like doing this interview, like right now. You know, I can ingest it. My firm doesn't care. My firm doesn't mind, you know, mind at all. You know,
okay.
So.
That's wonderful. Yeah, that's really great.
Yeah, and they're good to me here in that respect. So.
Now the cannabis cigarettes that you're getting, are they coming in hemp paper or is this just regular old cigarette paper? Are you?
Oh no, it's regular old cigarette paper. So what I do, and this was 30 years ago, they used to send with each shipment a 7-page report, basically telling you how to raise the moisture level. And it was steaming it. They basically came down to steaming it. Well, steaming it, of course, doesn't work. So what I learned right away is just to open them up, take 60 cigarettes at a time, take the medicine out of it, put them in a baggie with some moist paper towels for like three, four hours. And then take the moist paper towels out, and you have humidified cannabis. And then I roll each day what I need using good paper. Yeah.
Oh.
What a process.
Yeah, what a process. But that's fantastic.
I'm not complaining. It's kept me alive for the last 32 years.
Oh, we're very grateful.
Totally understand.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So what are you doing now to are you trying to get the government to do what with the cannabis for everybody now? There's so many states that are coming up with their own regulations and CBD only this and Charlotte's Web that and fake this and
yep.
You can't smoke and you have to walk your dog at 3:00 before you do it. So.
Okay, well, let me speak about what's happening in Florida, okay?
All right.
Is because, first of all, we've got an amendment that we were trying to get on the ballot, which we did. And it's an amendment that will allow physicians to recommend medical cannabis for any debilitating disorder that they believe would cause more good than harm. Basically, that's what it comes down to. And so we got it on the ballot, and we've got comes November 4th. Now, it's a constitutional amendment in our state. Therefore, it's got to pass by 60%. So we have to get 60 plus 1, which is not easy to do. Now, this is looked at as a Democratic approval, not so much Republicans aren't in favor of it, but the Democrats are more a Democratic issue. The gentleman running for governor used to be the governor in the state, but he was a Republican governor. And he ran for Senate, and he lost. And he lost in the primary. Oh, no, he lost in the election. He lost in the primary. He lost in the primary. Then he ran as an independent and lost in the election and kept the Democrat from winning the Senate seat. Now he has changed his side and is now a Democrat. And he's the leading candidate, and he will be the candidate for the Democratic side. And he has come out in favor of medical cannabis. Okay, so the Republicans were looking at this like a Democratic issue, for one, for Charlie Crist, and then we have a Republican governor. So what the Republicans did, and they control the State House, they passed this CBD bill, okay,
yeah.
Figuring, well, if we pass that bill, now the people in Florida will say, well, we don't need to go vote for this because we already have a marijuana bill, okay? And, of course, the parents that were fighting for the kids with the different epileptic disorders, one of them was a friend of mine. And I had been coaxing this guy and teaching this guy for the last 2.5 years. And he was one of the ones that was instrumental in getting the bill passed. But he is not naive. He understands that the low THC is not sometimes very good for an epileptic, and you need other strains. And so while we were happy with passing that bill to help some patients, in the last couple of days, the Senate and the House, the representatives, decided that CBD bill oil would also be good for cancer, and also be good for AIDS and a couple other diseases, okay? So these politicians says, hey, we say it's going to be good for it, so let's put them in the bill. So now a doctor can now recommend CBD for cancer. You know, forget it doesn't have any THC in it, you know, hardly at all, and cancer doesn't work without THC, but, medicine doesn't work. So that's the problem that we're having. And now they just sent out regulations, which I was just reading earlier today. They granted, by the way, when it passed, the governor is granting, okay, 5 licenses in the entire state for 20 million people. Okay, so it's going to be 5 regions. Each region is going to have 1 dispensary. And you got to put up $150,000. Then you got to have a $5 million bond. Now they just came up with more regulations this morning, which I had to laugh about. For you to have a dispensary, okay, you have to have a qualified MD either in your facility or available by phone, okay? this doctor now is basically responsible for your cleanliness and everything else. So this doctor is the one who's got to check everything, okay? Now, this doctor cannot write recommendations for cannabis or CBD, okay? And he, of course, cannot have any ownership. Yet he's supposed to be dying to help you out, and he gets paid a salary. And there's got to be a second doctor as backup in case the first doctor is not available.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
Now, isn't that amazing?
That, yeah, there's, it's too much. It's just
of course
too much.
And any doctor that's interested in the CBD or regular marijuana is going to want to recommend.
Well,
they're not going to want to have an administrative solution. They want to be the doctor. They want to recommend. They're not office managers.
No,
you know?
Well, and here's our question that we have. One of them, and maybe you know this, maybe you don't, but what's the very best way to use cannabis? We hear so much about, you know, juicing the whole plant versus, you know, taking it in dry capsule form versus CBDs or smoking or vaping. There's so much out there. And now with all these restrictions on, you know, CBD only, and you can't smoke it in some states, and they're really limiting the potential of the entire plant. What do you think?
They are. Well, I'm not an expert when it comes to that because I've never juiced the plant. Okay, I have taken pills, and I have, you know, of course, smoked, and I have vaped, and I've even tried a couple of those things that are called dabs, okay, which are quite different. Okay, but the way I find that it works best for me, okay, is plain old smoking it. Now, the thing about smoking is you waste a lot of the material, okay, you really do. It's not an economical way of smoking. But when you have as much material as you want, it doesn't matter if you waste some. So for me, I find that smoking really is the best method of ingesting cannabis. And vaping is good, but I don't think vaping, the heat does not get as much of the cannabinoids as I think burning it. Okay?
Right.
And there's reason to burn it. I mean, people like, we have a patient here in Florida who has ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. She's had it for 27 years. And you don't live with Lou Gehrig's disease. Well, she found oil at the beginning 27 years ago, and it's kept her alive. And what she needs to do in the morning, normally she'll vape in the afternoon, but in the morning she has to smoke because smoking, it irritates her lungs, and she gets rid of the moisture, you know, the liquid, everything that's formed in her lungs overnight. You know, so and vaping doesn't do that. But yet, once she gets rid of all the fluid in her lungs, then for the rest of the day she usually vapes. You know?
Wow.
And there's a patient that has to smoke. You know? So,
wow. I've never ever heard that before.
Yeah. Well, so I really think that, you know, whoever finds the best way for them, it would be, you know, would be the best for that person. But the states shouldn't limit, okay, how it's ingested. Okay. They should not.
To the patient.
Yeah.
Yeah. It should be up to the patient and their
physician. And how they want to use it.
How they want to use it and how they can. You know. That's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then what I wanted to also say as far as Florida is with this ballot initiative, I am the face and the voice as much as I can be for the campaign. Okay, so I'm the one that newspapers call for interviews, and I'm doing different debates and different speaking engagements. And I'm also, we've got a blue ribbon committee that's been put together of about 40 people that are bipartisan around the state, the movers and the shakers of the state, to actually write the policy that we want to see happen once the law passes November 4th. And there are people on the panel that are Republicans that are totally against the amendment. But as they said, they're going to work to try to defeat this amendment. However, if it passes, they want the best medicine possible. You know, they want the best product and the best, you know, policy as possible. So they want to help write the policy. And so I'm proud, and I'm head of the patients committee. I mean, I'm in charge of. I'm setting the policy for what we as patients want to see in this bill.
Well, and so, I was going to ask that. What is your bill going to look like? What will patients get in Florida if you have your will?
Well, I'm hoping that patients will have the right to go to a licensed dispensary because they're going to be licensed by the state, and to be able to have medicine that has been tested. So they know in a standardized testing, not, you know, five different ways of testing each different lab, it's going to be standardized. And so they're able to go in there and get medicine at a hopefully decent price and will be able to procure as much medicine as they need, if whatever their doctors and them decide. So if it's a oil or a tincture, then you know you're going to be using more than an ounce or so of herb in a week or so, or something like that. So I basically just want it set up to where the patients and the doctors will have the right to decide how much the patient needs, and the patient will be able to go into a dispensary, of course, apply for a card, you know, get the state card, and then be able to go to a dispensary, be able to qualify with that dispensary, and also there will be a database so they can't go dispensary shopping, shall we say, you know. I mean, there's nothing wrong with going to different dispensaries. It's just I think there's going to be a total amount of how much you get. You know, it's not going to be open-ended, in other words. And I'm afraid the state will have seed to sale, okay, you know, and cameras, the whole bit, to make it, you know, police-friendly, shall we say. But for the patient, again, it'll be nice if the patient will be able to at least procure medicine. And of course, a lot of the people that are going to need medicine are going to be on disability. And people on disability don't have money. And so we've yet to come up with a solution. Possibly a fee or something on each transaction. We don't want to call it a tax because we don't tax medicine. But there could be a fee that goes into a state coffer that people might be able to qualify to, you know, get funding out of that trust to be able to pay for their medicine. Because you can't put it on the backs of the dispensary owner either. It's making them, you know, give out medicine for free. Okay, I don't believe in that. Maybe a small percentage, the way Berkeley's doing it. I think they're taking 2%. But
right.
2% of what? But 2% of, you know, of course, it's going to be seed to sale, so we'll know how much each dispensary is selling. But, I mean, we're still, you know, we've got to have all this written up by the end of August. And then we've got the month of September to have open hearings where people can come and give their opinion of what we've put together.
For patients?
What's that?
What about growing for patients? Are you going to allow them to grow?
No, I'm afraid the law does not allow that. No. And believe me, I did not write this ballot initiative, okay? They didn't even contact anybody in Florida to write it. A House Majority Leader, who used to be ex-House Majority Leader, who's an attorney, teaches at the University of Florida, constitutional law, they got him to help write this. And this says that you cannot grow your own. So that'll be something that we'll have to pass down the road, because I want to see growing your own. I'm in favor of that.
Yeah.
Having that fresh cannabis on hand is just so important.
Yeah. A lot of people like to juice it, and just other than juicing it, therapeutically growing is very good for people, and they know what medicine.
Well, you know, the funny thing is my girlfriend, you know, Heidi, she says the only thing addicting about marijuana is growing it.
Well, that's pretty true.
That's what she says. She said that's the only thing addicting about it is once you start growing it, you really are addicted to growing. You know, you really enjoy it. She said it's really just so enjoyable, so relaxing, and she says that's the only addiction that marijuana causes.
That's awesome. That's a great addiction.
Yeah.
Now, Urban, how are you traveling these days with your medication? I know a lot of people out there are asking, you know, if there's if it's legal in one state, then they can travel to another state. So the reciprocity, and when are we seeing that going to start changing?
Well, in Florida, that's going to be one of the policies that I want to see is reciprocity. Okay, so my I can fly, well, not me, because I can fly anywhere. But a patient who had a card in Florida should be able to come to Arizona and be able to go into a dispensary and purchase medicine. Okay. Now, it brings up those several problems that, you know, since I'm helping write the laws, it brings up problems. Number one, how do you know that card is legitimate?
Right.
Okay, it could be counterfeit. We don't know, okay? So now do you tell somebody that you've got to pre-register with that state? Well, if you've got to pre-register with that state, that means there's people in the state that have got to verify all these papers and everything else. That costs money, okay? And it's just another form of bureaucracy. So that's not really practical. So... And another thing is, again, I don't want people coming into the state, going into a dispensary, purchasing product, and then trying to fly out with it. You know?
Right.
That's breaking federal law. So what I've come up with is to stop that is, number one, that there'll be if you get caught trying to take medicine out of the state, number one, you'll be fined at least $1,000. Okay? Number two, your name will be put on a database that every dispensary will have a right to. And so if you you will never be allowed into another dispensary in the state of Florida, period. Okay? That's, you know, anybody who brings a card in from out of state, the dispensary owner will have a database that they'll click into to make sure that that card is not on there. But that doesn't stop somebody from still using a counterfeit, you know, and also we'll use, besides the card, we'll use the verification of a driver's license, you know, to make sure that card's really that person, you know, to do something on that order. And then if what I'd like to see happen, if possible, of course you'd have to have the states working together on this, is that person that tried to take marijuana out of the state and it's fined $1,000, they should have to go back to their home state and do community service.
Huh.
You know, there should be more punishment. I mean, I don't want to see anybody go to jail, of course, you know, so that, no. But they should have more punishment. And I'd like to see the state of Arizona, if somebody from Arizona breaks the law, I'd like the state of Arizona to put something on their driver's license that says, hey, you've got to do 30 hours of community service. Until you do, you've got this offense on your license. Now, once you complete that 30 hours, then it comes off. As if it never happened. You know, I don't want to see any permanent marks. But I think somebody should be fined more than just $1,000. And people mentioned to me, we'll make it $10,000. Well, people can't, you know, that's too much. But if a state wants to, if they can do something like that, a community service project, you know, for 30 hours or something like that, that's good enough. You know?
So you're talking like mainly if a patient from another state comes and they're trying to, you know, take stuff back and maybe sell it or do whatever with it. So reciprocity is basically for, if you're a patient, you go to another state that allows medical cannabis, you just use what you need there. You don't, like, collect it and take it back.
Right. Exactly. That's what we want them to do.
Right.
Exactly. And the fact is, as far as trying to verify a license, you know, verifying that this card, even though it matches the driver's license, this card may be fake, okay? And we can't put the onus on dispensary owners to decide if a card is real or not. And we can't, and there's no database, I don't think, that somebody can pick up the phone and call some database in Arizona and say, I've got so-and-so here, is that a legal card? You know, it just can't be done. So what I'm going to say is basically we're going to have to be it on the honor system. I mean, if somebody shows the dispensary owner, you know, looks at a card, it looks good to him, the driver's license matches, then it's good. You know, that's all there is to it. We can't worry about it. And if 20% or 15% or more are illegal, then so be it. You know?
Well,
the way I look at it.
What do you think about a nationwide program? When is that coming? Because right now, you know, there's people that are on prescription medications like Oxy and Vicodin, morphine, and people even travel with their alcohol not so easily these days. I found you can't even bring a bottle of wine on a plane. But people are traveling with their prescription medicines, and they're not limited to go. I mean, they don't go, you know, they bring their medicines with them, whatever state they're going to, because it's a medicine, because they need it. I just feel like cannabis should be treated the same way. If it's your medicine, you should be able to take it where you need it.
You said magic word in what you just said. You said their prescriptions. Not their recommendations, their prescriptions. Now, Irvin Rosenfeld can travel with his tin can because it's his prescription. You see, that's why I'm legally allowed to go anywhere in the United States, because I have a prescription. Nobody else does. That's the difference. So.
So what kind of national program do you see happening then? Because if it's going to be like alcohol, then they're going to, you know, with alcohol, you can brew 100 gallons of alcohol per year. Everybody can if you're 21 and older. You can have 100 gallons of alcohol. So with cannabis, do you think they're going to say you can have, you know, X amount of pounds a year or plants or, you know?
What I think is that when I was in Congress and I met with, like, Boehner's office and Deborah Wasserman Schultz's office and Eric Cantor's office, they were shocked that the federal government was growing and supplying it. They had no idea that it was a federal program. Nobody knows about the federal program. Okay, and number two, they all said that this is not a federal issue. This is a state's rights issue. And I said to them, I said, would you say that publicly? Because that's what they feel. They go, no, we won't say that publicly, but that's really how they feel. So while things are changing, and they're trying to bring this national CBD bill up, okay, is what they're trying to do. You know, take it out of the as marijuana and call it hemp, and say that that's legal. The government's going to have to do something. Okay, the states, leaving it up to each state individually, at some point the feds are going to want their cut. And there's going to be some sort of federal program at that point. So, you know, and I hope they reschedule it to nothing. I mean, it shouldn't be under the scheduling of FDA or DEA, you know, because it's a plant. It doesn't fall under, you know, while it's a medicine, it doesn't fall under the criteria of FDA. And what I always think is funny is when people say that it's not approved by FDA, it's like, you know, there was no medicine in this country before FDA said there was medicine in this country. You know? And that's, of course, not true. So, you know, it's a plant that works. And, you know, millions and millions and millions of people now are using it nationwide. And without any really negative side effects. I mean, there are some dangers to cannabis. Okay, we don't want young kids using it, you know, in their formative years, because I think it does do some certain brain situations with, shall we say, you know. And of course, I also like to say, you know, there is another side effect of marijuana. It causes the domino effect. That's when you sit on your couch, pick up the phone, and call Domino's.
I like that.
Yeah. I was like, what? Yeah, got us. We're all fucked up. Yeah.
Anyway.
Hey, Heidi wants us to ask you about your conference coming up. Tell us about that.
I've got a conference coming up on August the 23rd here in Fort Lauderdale, and it's going to be called the Irv Rosenfeld's Business Cannabis Conference. And it's going to be an all-day conference where we're going to have some experts from around the country and locally, of course, that will be telling people all about the different types of businesses that are available once it passes here in Florida or even before that. Because, again, we have other businesses dealing in cannabis in the state that's, even though we're not legal. So we're going to be bringing in a gentleman by the name of Alan Brockstein, who is like the guru when it comes to cannabis stocks. He'll be speaking. We'll have doctors there. We'll have attorneys there. Of course, I'll be speaking and talking about what patients are looking for as far as in the dispensary and what they're looking for as far as you know, in doctors and what doctors need to do. And so it's just going to be an all-day event that hopefully people are going to walk out of there learning more, knowing more, and make contacts with the people who want to get in the business, and because there'll be funders there and there'll be people who are looking for funding. And so we're hoping to put all these people together in one big room and with several breaks during the day, of course, with lunch together. And hopefully everybody will walk out of there knowing more and being more sure about what they want to do. And so it's going to be a big business here in Florida. It's going to be a huge business in Florida. And we are going to allow profitable dispensaries and probably nonprofit. I mean, that's what I told you I wanted to talk to you about because, you know, we're writing the policy. Okay, it doesn't say anything in our bill. It doesn't say anything in our amendment, whether it's profit or nonprofit. Doesn't say.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
So therefore, I mean, I think being a stockbroker that I am, I think it should be for profit. I mean, you know, nonprofit is nice, but you know, we want to have a level playing field, whichever it is. Okay, I don't want one type having an advantage over the other. So, and of course, what I'm excited about is heading out your way.
I know that's going to be wonderful. We're excited. We're having Urban coming here August 9th for a book signing from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And you'll be in Phoenix as well, won't you?
I'll be in Phoenix as well. I'm flying in actually on Thursday, and I've got some business appointments Thursday and Friday for my brokerage business. And then Saturday and Sunday I've set up for any type of dispensaries for book signings and speaking engagements. So I will be able to anybody can contact me. Again, my cell phone number is 954-536-9011. Repeat, 954-536-9011. And give me a call, and we can set this up. I know I'll be at your facility between 10 and 12. And I want everybody who's listening to come out to it. I think that it's going to be a dynamite presentation. And I will have with me one of my full tin cans.
Okay. Wow.
So people will be able to see exactly what the government herb is like. They'll also be able to get the aromatic fragrance of it. Okay. I guess that's the nicest way to put it, okay? And the aromatic flavor of it. And I mean, it's a Jamaican-Mexican blend is really what it is.
Oh,
and
I have
so,
a
Yeah, it's not the strongest, but again, it works, and that's what counts. And of course, DEA. will not let me give out any samples.
Oh, we can't even trade?
No, afraid not.
When you come here, speaking of DEA, well, when you come here, are you allowed to go to the dispensaries and purchase cannabis?
That would be up to your state law. I mean, my federal prescription is a federal prescription, okay? So in most areas, I've been able to go into dispensaries, okay, without a problem. And as far as purchasing, you know, medicine, if I desire to, yes, I could do that, okay. But you know, I don't want to push anybody and make anybody feel uncomfortable.
Right.
So
right, right.
You know, so that's, you know, I don't force the issue. In other words, you know.
That's very exciting that you're coming out here. We always love when you visit, and we love having you on our show. Can you give everybody, other than your phone number, for those tech geeks out there, where can they go on the internet to find you? www what?
Right. Well, they can find me at several sites, but one is www.mymedicinethebook.com. And that's where people can, mymedicinethebook.com.
Okay.
And then they can leave messages. You know, when I was writing the book, I had come up with a title, and I really wanted to go with it. And up to about an hour before we went to print, I changed it. I wanted to use the name of the book, Potluck. Okay, and so I've got the website, www.potluckrx.com.
Uh-huh.
So that's my website. So I got that website figuring it would be good for the book. And so many of my friends, man, were just calling me up and saying, Irvin, you can't put pot on the book. You know, this just doesn't read well. You know, so I said, okay, I'll go with my second choice, meaning my medicine, because that's what it is, my medicine, you know. So, but that's why I've got that site.
Oh,
I thought that was a catchy. I mean, I thought potluck was really kind of catchy, you know?
It is. Very cute. Very cute. Yeah.
The whole new meaning in Colorado and Washington.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I hear Washington State's having problems now with the medical aspect because of the legalization.
Uh-huh. Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear that. What is happening?
Yeah. They're trying to basically almost stop medical use, and this way, see, they could tax it higher, you know, and so they're just making it as difficult as possible for patients. They're just soon now legal, let everybody just buy it and pay a high tax, you know, so that's what the state wants.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll get a program soon that will just allow all the states to handle it appropriately and get the medicine to the people that need it. You know?
Well, that's always what Bob Randall and I wanted to do. When I became legal in 1982, that was we talked about, you know, what we wanted to do, our life's mission was to educate people about the benefits of cannabis to where hopefully other people can benefit from it the way we had. And so, you know, after 32 years now, I think we've done a pretty good job. I mean, over half the country now is legal under state law. And or have recognized it as a medicine, and so we still got a long ways to go. But that's the game, is to keep people knowledgeable on the subject and try to, you know, fight state by state until we finally win.
Yes, so. And it looks like we're doing so with what you're doing. We're really, you know, appreciative and grateful that you put yourself out there, and we're sorry you have to go through what you do, but we're glad that at least our government, you know, sends you the medicine that you need to stay here, because it's an honor to have you with us.
It's true. You get to go around and educate is the most important part.
Yeah, well, I think so, and I appreciate that. And, yes, I'm thankful to get the medicine every day I wake up. I know I don't have to worry about where my medicine is coming from. And even more important is I don't have to worry about Johnny Law breaking down my door.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
What a relief. You know, I mean, gosh, that's going to be a really wonderful day when the patients of this country can feel that way. Because even though we have medical cards and we're in a medical program, it's still nerve-wracking
and scary,
scary at times, you know. And it causes anxiety and things that it shouldn't.
Exactly.
It should be causing and a better quality of life for people that need it.
Exactly. And you know, one of the things I thought when people talk to me, and some people come up to me and tell me that, you know, marijuana makes them paranoid. And I go, really? And they go, yeah, it just, you know, anytime I try it, I get really paranoid. I just can't smoke it. I go, let me ask you a question. Do you chew gum? And, of course, most people go, yeah, I chew gum. I said, does it make you paranoid? They go, of course not. Well, guess what? President Obama is going to announce tonight that starting at 12:01 a.m., anybody caught with chewing gum is going to prison.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, the next time, tomorrow, when you chew that gum, you think about that. And guess what's going to happen? All of a sudden, gum's going to make you paranoid.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so true.
It is true.
You know? I mean, that's just how I equate to people. I said, you know, it's that simple. Because I know when I went to Canada, the first time I went to Canada for a business meeting, I took on the Canadian government, and they won't let me in. And they still won't let me in, okay, with my medicine. Because we won't let their citizens in with their medicine, so why should they let me in with mine? So as I originally talked to the Minister of Health, I said, you mean I'm a pawn in the war between the two countries? And he said, yeah, you are. And he kind of snickered. So when I got off the plane in Vancouver, it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and the vice president of this company that I had to go up there for a stockholders meeting picks me up, I get in the car. He goes, look, we got one stop to make, and I don't want to know anything about it. I'm thinking, that's kind of weird, you know? So he drives into a neighborhood. Now it's like 3 o'clock in the morning, and he pulls into a driveway. He goes, go in there. The guy's waiting for you. Okay. So I go knock on the guy's door, and the guy opens up. He says, oh, I'm glad you finally made it. Come on in. And I walk in. I still don't know what's going on. And he hands me a container. And he says, open it up. And I open it up. It's sunflower seeds. He says, no, look down the bottom. And there was an eighth of an ounce of pot and some papers. So he said, that's $50 Canadian. Just get some Canadian money before the stockholders meeting tomorrow, and I'll see you at the stockholders meeting, and you can pay me then. I went, okay, that's fine, you know. So I go back to the car. I don't say a word to the, you know, to the vice president of the company. And I get to the hotel, and it's, you know, now 3:30 in the morning, and I'm excited because I hadn't smoked for a long time because I didn't have it with me on the plane, and so I couldn't come into Canada with it. So I open it up, and it is some of the skunkiest skunk you've ever smelled. Okay, I roll up a joint, I take a hit, and all of a sudden I got so paranoid, I wouldn't believe it. Okay, it's like, oh my God, wait a minute, you're smoking in a foreign country, breaking the law. I put it out immediately. And I said, I'm taking this back to him tomorrow. You know, I'm not smoking this, okay? Well, the morning came, and I opened the blinds to the hotel room, and it turns out the hotel was on a lake or on a big bay. And the windows opened, okay? So, the hotel was, like, right by the bay. So all I had to do was open the window and blow the smoke out the window. I wasn't paranoid anymore.
Oh,
so,
there you go.
That was my lesson as far as, you know, what makes you paranoid is the law, not the medicine.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow, what a story. How trusting were you? Hey, go into this guy's house. 3 o'clock in the morning.
I've seen that movie before.
Well, yeah. Twice.
Well, I was just the vice president, you know, of the company, so I wasn't worried.
That's true. And what a good guy to just say, hey, we're not doing this.
Hey, man, he's looking out for your health.
Yeah, he was looking out for your health.
That's what you call him.
Yes.
Friend.
Yeah.
He was.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and telling us about your story, and we look forward to seeing you in person. And for everybody out there, 5315 East Broadway Boulevard, Suite 103 in Tucson, Arizona, you're all welcome. Come down. Buy a book, have Urban sign it, talk with him, share stories. You can see and smell the cannabis, but you can't have any. We'll get too excited, but we'll get to see
exactly.
It.
And that's on August the 9th, correct?
August
the 9th, Saturday. Right. So no excuses. We're not working on the weekend, so get down here and come have a cup of coffee and some snacks with Urban. It'll be great. Thank you again. Check out, we've got mymedicinethebook.com. We've got potluckrx.com, and there's also a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/mymedicinethebook. So you can find Urban everywhere. And what was the phone number if you wanted to call and chat?
954-536-9011.
All right. Give him a call and ask him some questions. And thank you so much, Irvin.
I look forward to seeing you.
Yeah.
Okay, I look forward to seeing you all.
Oh, us too. Thank you. Have a great day.
Irvin.
Okay, take care. Talk to you then. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Wow.
Awesome.
He's so wonderful. And just how proud are we of him?
I just like to sit back and listen to him talk. He's another one that's got, like, his story.
You can go. I know.
That one I hadn't heard before.
Which one?
The one about the...
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah.
3 o'clock in the morning job hunt.
There was one time where he told us a story. He had to get back to his office and show his paperwork, and he had brought his paperwork with him, and they took him down to the precinct, and then they finally let him go. It was a whole...
Oh, after being caught, quote-unquote?
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Well, so. He tells us, he usually just tells the officer who's ever, you know, questioning him, so just, as my BS would say, GTS. You Google that stuff, we'll say
uh-huh.
that. Yeah. Google that stuff. They Google him, and it's
just
you know...
Google me.
Yeah.
Millions of pages of Irvin. First thing that comes up is Irvin with his, you know, federal can of 300 joints.
The book is filled with a lot of, you know, the stories and everything that's happened to him, and interesting on how it's come this far.
Yeah, it is very interesting, and over half our states are supporting marijuana use. So it's going to be very soon, I think, in the next couple of years, that we see this nationwide plan put into action, don't you think, Kansas kids?
I totally agree.
Did you see what the New York Times had to say? The New York Times backs marijuana legalization. Perhaps the most renowned newspaper in the country, if not the world, has proclaimed that it is time to finally put an end to marijuana prohibition in the U.S.
Amen.
The New York Times recently printed a story in their Sunday editorial that stated, "The federal government should repeal the ban on marijuana. We reached the conclusion after a great deal of discussion among the members of the Times editorial board, inspired by a rapidly growing movement among the states to reform marijuana laws." The Times also looked into the idea of letting states continue to decide their own fate in regards to how to govern marijuana on a state level and feel that it isn't the best option. They went on to say, quote, "We considered whether it would be best for Washington to hold back while the states continued experimenting with legalizing medicinal use of marijuana, or even simply legalizing all use. Nearly three-quarters of the states have done one of these," quote, while the Times doesn't necessarily speak for Congress, they most definitely have a massive following and are seen as perhaps the most respected news publication on the planet. So it isn't as if they just decide to up and publish something without reviewing all the facts. The United States' perception of marijuana is changing rapidly, and it seems like we are only moving forward. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Over half the states. It's amazing.
I always say, you know, being in the front lines of this all, you see it happening a lot faster. And, you know, being the one that shares information with people and things like that, they really are amazed that it's happening so fast after you let them in on what's going on, or they didn't even hear about that. And I just, you know, it's having this as a medication out there for people is really, really important.
Well, and I want someone from the federal government on our show. I want to know why, since Irvin's been receiving these cannabis cigarettes for over 30 years, they've not asked him one question about his health. What studies are they doing? You know? None? Some?
Well,
and why
how
only
scared they are.
3% THC? You know, what...
Have they been using the same strain since the 70s?
Yeah.
I mean, have
apparently,
they not changed anything?
Their Acapulco Gold is still sitting on the same. Yeah,
I mean,
they've got the same mother plants and the same clones.
Man.
Same that's it. They probably harvested once, like 100,000 pounds. He's going to smoke that for the rest of his life.
That's so
cool. Oh, man.
Oh, that's not right. What you got, cannabis kid?
I got this, clearing the air on medical marijuana in the workplace.
Nice. Raise the roof.
Employers will ignore Mary Jane at their own peril in wake of recent changes to Canada's medical marijuana system, says the employment lawyer. Companies should be prepared to accommodate a growing number of workers on weed after the federal government brought its new regime known as the Medical Marijuana Purpose Regulations, MMPR. Under the new guidelines, a patient must obtain a prescription for marijuana that can bring a federal licensed grower. Employers have to understand have to understand that their legal obligations when facing the employee with pot prescription, according to the employment lawyer, David Witten, would include the fact that most find it accommodate the employee's need to use the drug in the workplace. Currently, an estimated 40,000 Canadians treat various conditions with pot, but Health Canada estimates that nearly 500,000 Canadians will be using medical marijuana within 10 years. Employers are going to ignore Mary Jane at their own peril, Witten told them, CTVnews.ca, in a telephone interview. She's coming to dance with whether they like it or not. So what are the most pressing issues that both medical marijuana users and their employers should know about? Here's Witten's top pieces of advice. Employers, educate themselves. Stereotypes about pot users. Abound. And Witten says that the first thing employers do is read up on marijuana's medicinal properties. Employer presented with the medical marijuana prescription can also take steps such as sending a questionnaire home with the employee to be filled out by a physician. This way, an employer can find out answers to the key questions, such as how much marijuana the employee is required to take and what parts of the employee's job may be affected by consumption. Very nice. Create a pot accommodation plan before the employer can say that the use of medical marijuana in the workplace cannot be accommodated. It must be demonstrated that every potential possibility concession has been investigated and all opportunities have been exhausted. The employee has obligations to. An employee who is taking the drug, such as an antibiotic, may choose not to report it to his boss unless the medication will have a serious impact on the ability to do the job. That's the other thing is a lot when other people use the medication, it makes them feel different ways. So especially from the sativa and indica. So if the person's coming to work and it helps them concentrate more, maybe with their ADD or anything like that.
Absolutely. Here's something I want to read real quick. If you come down to Tumbleweed Tell Center, we've got a whole little information pack on discrimination laws in Arizona and their statutes about the workplace, a landlord, your doctors can't not allow you to use your prescriptions, and, in fact, Child Protective Service cases. But what I want to read right here, so you can come down and get a copy of that. But this is for this weekend. Woo-hoo! For the girls and guys in Napa. 9 reasons why marijuana is safer than alcohol, kids. This is why we'll be partaking more in cannabis than alcohol this weekend. Here we go. Yeah, this is fantastic. Reason number 1. Are you listening out there? Marijuana can curb brain damage, especially damage inflicted by drinking. Marijuana actually contains properties that can help with preventing brain damage brought on by drinking alcohol. It can also help treat depression, Alzheimer's, and other brain-related disease. Number 2, marijuana can help treat cancers caused by drinking. Alcohol is a toxin that has the potential to cause breast, liver, colon, and other cancers. Close to 20,000 cancers-related deaths in 2009 were said to be the result of excessive alcohol consumption. Marijuana has been proven to help alleviate cancer symptoms and possibly stop some cancers. Alcohol typically causes more aggressive and, in turn, violent behaviors. However, marijuana is well known to do the opposite by helping users relax. Number 4, alcohol addiction is no joke. Alcoholism exists virtually everywhere in the world, and withdrawals from it can result in death or irreversible brain damage. While marijuana addiction does exist, it is far less severe than alcohol addiction. Alcohol has killed its users. Marijuana hasn't. Alcohol kills 2.5 million people across the globe annually, compared to an astonishing 0 marijuana-related deaths. Number 6, alcohol can prevent muscle growth. Alcohol is known to decrease testosterone and interrupt sleep patterns, which can affect muscle growth. Number 7, marijuana has medicinal benefits. There's a long list of ailments marijuana is said to treat, from chronic pain to inflammation. One can argue that a glass of red wine has antioxidant properties, but other than that, alcohol does little to nothing positive for an individual's well-being. Number 8, high sex is way better than drunk sex. after you've had a few too many drinks, alcohol gives you a numbing sensation, which decreases feeling all over your body. While this can be good in some situations, like if you were to fall on your face, it's certainly not optimal when it comes to lovemaking. However, marijuana increases sensitivity and can make the overall sexual experience more enjoyable. And number 9, alcohol consumption often results in bad decisions, while high decisions tend to be more thought out. That's true. Alcohol lowers your inhibitions, which results in questionable decision-making. Marijuana usually typically comes with more thoughtfulness, and they have similar conclusions like sober people do, but it might take them a few seconds longer to make that decision. So, anyway, yeah. So my bestie's texting me a bunch of comments here. This is really funny. I threw those out for her for the rest of the gang in Napa. So thank you all for listening to this. Yeah, we're going to post that right away because that's a good one. And look at that. We already ran out of time. Our show's darn near over. And we got some folks to thank.
Yes, thank you, Irvin.
Yeah, Irvin Rosenfeld, thank you for coming. And August 9th, everybody come down to Tumbleweeds Health Center, 5315 East Broadway Boulevard, and come meet Irvin. Buy a book, have him sign it, and chat with him and see those government joints. Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Check those
there.
Out. AZMarijuana.com, where we just read that article from. Culture Magazine, you can check out at iReadCulture.com. Blog Talk Radio, Tumbleweeds Health Center, Studio C, Expert Med Testing. Thank you, everybody, for joining us.
Thank
our
you,
Belstar. And we have the dispensary from Green Valley coming on our show next week. They're under new management. They've got a whole new look, name, feel, and meds, and we're going to have them on. We're going to chat it up. Yeah, it'll be great. We also have a medical marijuana convention of sorts happening August 30th. Down at the old train depot, 127 West 5th Street, I believe it is, something like that, 6 to 9 p.m. You can check out tumbleweedshealthcenter.com for more information. But really, seriously, come down here for this for the book signing on August 9th, Saturday. It's going to be awesome. Thanks again so much for joining us. Remember,
be smart,
be safe,
and educate.